I could call the meeting to order. Chairman's prerogative, but today I have someplace to go at 4:30 sharp. So I am hopeful that we will start on time and finish on time. And if not, you're welcome to stay and talk after. I know.
She has a wedding to plan.
Yes, so. I have a child getting married on Saturday, yes. So I have a few exit details to do. What can I tell you? Probably one last time wouldn't be a bad idea to go around and introduce ourselves and whom we represent. May I?
Rhoda Willis, House Chairman of the Higher Education Committee.
David Walsh, Professor Emeritus from Connecticut State University and 10-year head of CSUAAUP.
John Shima with the Metro Hartford Alliance.
Mary Lou Oleski, the Executive Director of the International Festival of Arts and Ideas, which kicks off on June 14th on Saturday. No wedding, just a festival, but...
Dennis Jones, NCHEMS.
Lois Schneider, Management Consultant.
Vargas Hajimichael, Fairfield University.
John Bennett, Emeritus Permanent.
Welcome back.
Kathy Marioni, Department of Labor.
Mike Gargano, Connecticut State College and University System.
Judy Goldfarb, Early Childhood.
Carrie, can we pick you up, please?
Tardy, Carrie yeah. Kelly from OPM.
But you're here.
That's right.
Most important. Thank you all. With that said, I wonder if I might entertain a motion to approve our March minutes, please. In a second. Thank you. All in favor? Opposed? Abstentions? We're good. So today, we have two important tasks ahead of us, and hopefully good conversations. The first of which, and you've all, with the materials for the meeting today, and hopefully you've picked it up, have a goal, the goal statements that we've talked about. Everybody have a copy, as I'm struggling to find the one that I've written on here. I'm going to find mine in a second. Because what I'd like to do... Absolutely. So, as you find a seat, Sally and Headley, if I could ask you to just introduce yourselves, please, and tell us where you're from. And Headley, we're glad to have you. It's not a class day, so I always feel bad when he is one of those diligent faculty members who actually teaches on our day that we meet. The two tasks, again, are to look at the goals, and today it's hopefully where the rubber meets the road. I'd like very much at the conclusion of this discussion to have consensus around these are the right goals. Understand that there will be some wordsmithing at a later date, but what we are looking for is agreement around the conceptual framework for these goals. Are they the right goals? We've talked about them, and we have looked at the data, and we have talked about them. But if we are truly to write this plan, it is imperative that we come to a final agreement that these are the right goals. And our second piece of the agenda then today is to really look at what options we really have for what kind of an entity might we entertain to sustain these strategies that are going to come forward. And then lastly, we'll talk about sort of what happens over the summer and when the plan is out and all of that. So with that said, I wonder if we can turn to the goals. I want to acknowledge something that we really should have done, but John Bennett pointed out to us in an email I think everybody got. In our first and second goal, we talk a lot about degree and educational attainment, but we noticeably forgot to talk about the quality that goes with it, and that's certainly critical. We are not here, as John said, just to talk about the numbers that come out with those degrees and certificates, but that it be quality learning. So I'm going to propose some wording and see if this satisfies that particular comment. So if you look at Goal 1 that talks about increasing attainment and talks to this 70% by 2015, at the conclusion of that statement before the targets, I would suggest the following, as helped crafted by Dennis Jones, which I think is a wonderful writer. The education associated with these credentials should be of high quality and reflect the deeper learning required to meet the intent of the goals. My facilitator training always told me to be quiet, but people are supposed to fill the silence. What do we think about that? Yes, let me read it for a second time. The education associated with these credentials should be of high quality and reflect the deeper learning required to meet the intent of the goals. John, I suppose I should turn to you and ask if that, again, we're not going to, I would hope we're not going to do the final wordsmithing here, but does that get at the crux of, of what you're suggesting? Perfect. Okay. Will? how about if, and again, we will entertain all of those expected, perhaps. How about if we let Dennis and Ames help guide us to that final wordsmithing, but we've gotten a couple of suggestions, and with that, wording perhaps change. And again, my goal today is not for us to wordsmith. This is ugly when you try to edit by committee. So I don't think
especially
any. Especially with that. I didn't say that. I was one at one point. So let me put the goals back on the table. We've got the three of them. One is attainment. One is really getting at that globally competitive economy and sustainable regions and communities. And the third is really around the affordability of education. Are we in agreement that these are the right goals to guide our strategic plan?
I think all the data we've seen over the months since last year certainly point to those goals. There might be others, but certainly these are correct.
Thank you. Other comments? So far, so good. Yes, Judy.
I think the goals are great. I'm still concerned about governance, and I don't know whether that's a goal or whether that fits into some other sense of the plan.
By governance, you're talking about the structure of higher education. Again, let me back up for a second. These goals are intended to be a framework for institutions and collections of institutions to figure out how exactly they translate into specific actions. That is not necessarily in our purview. That will become something which each of the units of higher education, both public and private, will want to address themselves. If they are, in fact, buying into the goals, then structure will follow, hopefully. But again, I don't believe that's our charge. But something to pay attention to.
Please. I think that though it would be fair to say, and we'll get into this in the next section, that the overall structure of the system is open for the means to get to an end. I think that the distinction we make, these are the ends, and I'd say that, for you to raise issues about governance, is a means to the end. And the institutional issues, we want to make sure we follow the guidance that you just said. We don't want to mess around with the issues that are really the responsibility of the governing boards.
Would agree. Judy, does that give you some comfort?
I just wanted to pursue it a little bit more, if you don't mind, Judith. When you say governance, were you talking institutionally? I'm not sure. I was wondering if I could sort it a little bit out so I could get a better handle.
Well, as a novice and an outsider, I just see that there are separate structures for governance for different parts of higher education within the state system. I understand the privates are outside of that, but we have a sense of two different ways of governing our college and university system, the systems, so that we have systems, we don't have a system.
Now, I think that what I'd suggest is that we actually bring that up within the context of the next part of the agenda. Just simply because I think the intent of the goals is to actually provide a framework that may not be, and to in fact get the various parts, including the independent sector, working in greater synergy to achieve those goals. That may not be structure in terms of, you know, bureaucratic structure, but the intent is to create greater synergy of various parts to achieve goals. So we ought to talk about that, you know, at the next section of the agenda.
I certainly would agree in that part of what I hope we are going to end up with is a way in which for all of higher education to work more collaboratively, not that we haven't in the past, but to work less with less siloed opportunities, but with more of a cross-functional working collaboration as opposed to in paper and written in words. Other comments about the goals? Good questions. This is the time to answer them now. Please, Mary Lou.
I just wanted to point out something that might be somewhere between a gap in logic and wordsmithing, but I think it's an important point to make. I think the goals are solid, but within the document we reference a lot of language around the importance of culture, quality of life, and in terms of retaining workforce. But we eliminate any conversation about the value of a liberal arts education. And I think it's very important to point toward economic goals, and I think it's great that we say that 20% of all of the credentials will point toward meeting those projections. But this document really does weight pretty heavily on what it means to have a great lifestyle in our state, and I think some language that points to a broader commitment on the education front might be valued.
Yes, John.
I think I agree with what was said, except I would change it from a liberal arts education to what the American Association of Colleges and Universities calls a liberal education, which applies to liberal arts and science, but it also applies to engineering, my home area, and all the other majors. I totally agree with that. That was part of my thing. I didn't say anything until now, A, because I thought it might be wordsmithing, but B, I also heard the word deeper in what Judy read. And that, to me, that's very much in keeping with a liberal education.
I don't want to in any way suggest that there won't be some refinement of this, you know, and so this discussion is a healthy one, and I think that's where we're going to leave Ames and Dennis to help us reflect some of these nuances that are important to get there. Yes, John?
So to that point, so how does that relate to the charge that we've been given based on the legislative act? Does it relate to it or not?
Absolutely. I mean, this becomes the cornerstone of the strategic plan, you know, and what happens next is all of these goals, the targets, and then some, you know, deeper both policy recommendations and strategies, will follow in the report. But until we have agreement on the goals, it's really hard for Dennis and Ames to go back and actually create that plan. But that's what they are. That is what's to happen, and that does, I believe, satisfy the legislative charge. Yes. Does that?
Well, I think broadly it does. I mean, not specifically, but broadly.
Help me understand the specifics you're looking for.
Well, I'm just going back to the legislation and how it was crafted. So not that I don't think that point is important. I just don't remember reading anything in relation to that relative to the legislative act. But that's fine.
In terms of the goal?
In terms of the liberal arts piece of
as someone who helped craft that, I would say it's very much legislative intent that would be
okay.
Included. And
done.
In fact, the fact that culture and arts was added specifically points to how important we thought it was when we were doing this. So I love that Mary Lou raised it. I think it was really important.
John and I had that conversation in email online this very morning, and I'm grateful that he clarified the difference between, in his mind, liberal and liberal arts, but I think it really does need some focus.
Yes, John.
I just would add that the reason that I'm such a stickler on this is that I don't think an education, no matter how valuable it is, if it's associated with employment, job-related skills, they're all fine, but they need to be done, my words, within the context of a liberal education. Because I think it's the only way you can maintain it. And I know I'm going to see there's people in this room that probably don't agree with me on that. But that is my reason for always bringing this up. It isn't enough just to be a trained employee. We need to educate people so that they can move with the flow and also contradict the flow when they believe it's appropriate. I don't think you can do that if you're just developing skills.
It'll come as a surprise to you that I actually do agree with you, but I guess my personal definitions of education and, you know, I don't see the distinction between education and training because I think good training is education. And it includes all of those problem-solving, critical thinking skills, all of those which I think are inherent in when people talk about liberal education. And as somebody who talks to employers all the time, that critical – and we actually just did a new survey. I don't know if anybody's seen the new manufacturing survey, but the one most difficult and highest level requirement, skill requirement of employers in manufacturing is critical thinking. So you have support from the business community in that as well. So see, there is more agreement than you think. Other thoughts? Dennis, please.
Can I ask Sally and Mike and Judy Greiman just to address the question of the extent to which these goals can serve as a useful framework within which the goals of the systems and the institutions, in Judy's sense, in fact, can be helpful, can provide an umbrella under which you can comfortably put your own goals. And I think they do. I think we've tried to be responsive. But I want to make sure before we get any further into this that we're not going to get down the road and then say, oops, we have said something here that is flies in the face of what the systems in particular need to do. So, and I don't care who.
Well, I'm happy to go first. As I look at this, I think these goals and the entire document
aligns with exactly what the state of Connecticut needs. I think when you clearly look at the population in Connecticut, that the goals here in many ways touch upon every one of the populations, that provides a guide to all of us in how we're going to provide different forms of education to different forms of the cohort. That clearly, as the traditional student population begins to decline here and continues to decline in the Northeast, one of the critical and most important things that we can do in post-secondary education is to address the adult population. And addressing that adult population, in some cases, is retraining with new certification, but also to look at opportunities of which we can create stackable types of credentials and other means of credentialization, so that ultimately what we have in Connecticut is a more educated citizenry, and a citizenry that is mobile, and a citizenry that touches upon everything that my colleagues espouse with a liberal education. So I think this aligns what we're doing. I think it aligns what's needed in the state of Connecticut. And I think clearly credentials like certificates is part of this driving force that we need to pay a lot more attention to than what we perhaps have had in the past. With that.
Continuing around the room, I think they're the right goals. I think that they're the goals that my institutions actually spend their days on now, and certainly understand the importance of stepping out even further on some of these. So I think that they're clearly and concisely sort of hitting the sweet spot of where the state needs to be, and sort of saying it all together is a good thing. I have some slight concerns about, by listing these targets, are these our only targets? Are these examples of targets? And so, for example, in the affordability, where we don't have a target around state financial aid, I have some concerns, as you might. Nobody in this room would be surprised that I'd be saying that. But I think that overall the goals are exactly right where we need to be.
I would suggest probably that there will be some additions, and again, a lot of flesh added to that, and the issue of affordability and financial aid is clearly on the radar screen. So that's certainly ready. Sally.
Yeah, so I would agree. I think, you know, we've talked about this before, but while some of these are goals that I think all of our institutions would agree to, there are mission differences, and I think that has to be noted at some point. So, you know, we don't have a lot of remedial education that's needed at UConn. We're in a very fortunate situation, and I would bet that at the independent schools, some do, some don't. Depends on the school. We've actually already reduced the attainment gaps between whites and minorities over the last 15 years of very focused effort with various programs. We're working on certificate programs. I've talked about our online certificate programs as being a very big part of what we're going to do and not focus on an undergrad online program. And we continue to work on the urban core areas with our undergraduate programs in Stanford and adding housing, our commitment to moving to Hartford and continuing to expand ECE, our early college experience, so that students that are in the top 20% of their classes at Stanford and Hartford and Waterbury can actually come to UConn and have up to a year, even more, if they choose to take as many classes as they might. So, you know, number one, certainly not every one of the targets applies to us, but we certainly agree with it. The second is all about what we did with NextGen. So it's exactly how we sat down and thought about NextGen and targeted our resources and our hiring plan to the workforce. We spent almost a year carefully looking at the jobs and what we needed to do. So we agree with that, and we think we've done a good job at that. In the last, we've just gone through an affordability study. We maintain that we are a very affordable university. Whereas the state contributions to the university have gone down, we have increased our financial aid. So we're doing the very, very best we can on financial aid. We're consistently looking for philanthropy, and we agree with that goal. So the best way for me to kind of comment on these is to go through them individually. But we're not all the targets don't apply to all of our institutions. I think that the goals apply.
Thank you for. I thought we were on the right track, but I want.
But ultimately, each of you described the way in which these goals, you're already working on these goals and the way in which they apply, and that's really the litmus test, I think, that this is in fact hopefully, framework that resonates with all of higher education in the state. So thank you for that. That does feel rather good. So unless, are there other comments that people want to make at this point? If not, what I would... Oh, surely.
Someone had asked this question about the targets, whether or not... Judy, did you ask that? Whether or not we would be adding another target or as we move forward, is that... That's definitely... Because one of the things that under affordability, and I think Judy was getting at, is what our policy in Connecticut is in terms of financial aid, and is it the best we can do in the most equitable way, and are we reducing student loans? Anyway, I just throw that out there because I think that is something that I certainly feel like we need help with,
and that is one that we will specifically address as we get between now and September.
Okay, thank you.
And so are you asking us to vote on the three goals, or are you asking us to vote on this sheet?
I think knowing that there will be additions and fleshing out and some nuances added into it, it's really the essence of the three goals, not necessarily only what is underneath it, the document. Yes?
The point I want to make is that particularly under goal two, they were purposely written to reflect somewhat what Sally was saying, that their institutions play different roles. UConn will play a much stronger role on the research, parts of it. Other institutions will be more involved in the regional engagement. So I just want to make sure that whatever this comes out, the targets will reflect the diversity of missions in the state, which I think will be important rather than having one measure apply to everybody.
I think the ultimate end goal is inclusivity, to make sure that this is developing a system. Yes, Judy. Oh, I thought you were. Whatever. All right. So, any other clarifications or comments needed? What I really would like to do is just to make sure we have consensus. I don't know that we need to do a formal vote. I'm a big person of thumbs up, thumbs down. Can you live with it? So, thumbs up, anybody? We're good? Good to go? That is a huge accomplishment. And we've spent a lot of time, and thanks to Ames and Dennis and a lot of good data and a lot of very good conversation from all of you, I think we've arrived at a place where this diverse group can all find something that they can live with, which is great, and hopefully really attach themselves. It's more than living with it. It's actually being able to hang your hat on it. So that part was wonderful, so thank you. And the next is actually a very interesting conversation as well, too. So let's move our thinking process to, okay, as the plan gets fleshed out, what happens to that plan going forward? And how does that plan, how do we create a sustainability to that plan? And to that conversation, I'm going to turn to Dennis and Ames to talk to us about some options for us to think about.
And at this, you know, it's probably useful just to at least remind ourselves that, you know, when we had the last conversation about goals, Vagos put on the table the question about how do we get this done? This is all well and good, but then how do we give it legs? How do we make sure that, you know, it goes beyond just three nice goals on a piece of paper? And so that's the next part of the conversation. And part of that is around some kind of entity that has to take the responsibility for this, wake up, you know, where the people in that entity wake up every morning and say, our job is to pay attention to this agenda, not to individual institutions, not to systems, not to making sure that institution A is well led and et cetera, but that the enterprise, in fact, attends to these goals. So that's the conversation to which we want to move next. Okay?
And out here, those things. Just as a sense of what we're thinking about here, and it relates a little bit to the question of structure. Our sense is, if you can think of a means that are the words are purposely selected of entity and venue, and even the word authority, I think is less helpful in this context because there needs to be a way that draws together the whole system, including the independent sector, in a way that is going to move the system as a whole, which is a, you know, loosely coupled system, frankly, towards these goals. Each of the systems, well, it's certainly UConn and the, you know, and Mike's operation are bureaucratically organized that way, but as we pointed out, the independent sector plays a really critical role. So it's how do you get synergy among these elements? And frankly, it's really important that it be connected with the P20 efforts in the state, because the goals, as you've agreed to them, if you have a 70% goal, as we've discussed, you cannot get there without dealing with everything from early childhood education to better high school completion to adult education and everything and all the pieces. So we've talked about this, but that's basically that came out of our policy review. And we talked about criteria. In order for these things to work, you really need the major civic, business, and cultural leaders of a state involved and behind it. And incidentally, one of the things I think Dennis and I have really learned about this state is that you can't talk about those issues that statewide somehow in Connecticut doesn't always work. It really works around a set of broader regions that have different cultures and business and everything. And so how you really build upon what's happening in the greater New Haven area or Hartford or Fairfield County or the northeastern part of the state, different parts. There are different leaders involved in those, but how to really draw them together in this effort is really important. It has to connect with things that they feel are important, you know, and imperative about the future of the state. One of the really critical parts about this is that our experience around the country is that if you burden these kinds of activities with the points in that last bullet, the regulatory and administrative tasks absolutely drive out attention to policy. And so we really would strongly urge that you really think of something that is not encumbered that way, because it will in time lose its credibility. Maybe just as one elaboration on this, and this is something Dennis can talk about in terms of finance. One way to look at this is in the sequence of the state budget process. Most states begin assembling their essentially budgets for 2 to 3 years out by discussing really what are the major strategic priorities for the state that really ought to form the budget process for the next year. And if you think of an entity which essentially can feed into that process and be helpful to the governor and the legislature and saying in the next, I'm not talking about the next month, I'm saying over a period of the next 4 or 5 years, what are the major areas for investment? In some respects, the investments in UConn were very much that kind of strategic investment. And I think what you would really see in this thing, in this kind of the outcome of this, a policy entity saying, yes, those were important investments, but there are a whole set of other complementary investments related to getting to the 70% goal, the engagement of higher education in the future of the state, and in affordability. So the best kind of entity you have is one that will be listened to by the major influential leaders in shaping that long-term sort of investment policy for the state. So in some ways, an entity that's sitting off here with a set of vested interests, disconnected from any credibility with the governor and the legislature, is going to have zero impact on that. Just to put it in a negative way, it has to have that kind of potential of influence for the state. So those were some of the thoughts that led to the idea of that we talked about in the proposal of what we have before you in sort of recommendation number one. I think that
Ames, you have a question from Vargas, I think. A question from Vargas.
Yeah. Right here.
Yes.
Can you go back to the previous slide?
Yeah. Incidentally, we put those together about 2 months ago, so we refined them a little bit. Yes, sir.
I think regarding the composition of the entity you're referring to, I think there's a major gap. There's nobody from education, the academic world, and education. And I think there should be, obviously. I mean, I see the project, our project, as a supply and demand. The suppliers are the academic institutions. I can envision an entity that deals with those things, with the supply, without their leadership being included in the entity. I think it's a major gap here.
I'll tell you what, let me give you pros and cons of that, okay? This is really focused on demand. Our experience in the country, overwhelmingly, if you get these entities with a majority or a large membership of the entity made up of the people who are the providers, it quickly deteriorates in its credibility because you have to, it's making recommendations focused on the needs of the population. And so what you end up having are people who have had significant leadership roles. For example, as give you one example in Virginia, for example, what the major organizer of the entity like this has been chair of the board of the University of Virginia. He's near chair of the board of Princeton University, but he happens to have been founder of the Weather Channel, and he's been a major civic leader. So you can get built into this people who have played roles. The second point is that these entities really don't work well unless they have very strong advisory and consultative processes with exactly the groups you're talking about. But it's a role of advice rather than necessarily being upon the entity. But, Vargas, this is not there's not a prescribed thing, so your point is perfectly legitimate. I mean, I can give you other examples with the majority of business leadership and the presidents of several of the major institutions in the state, for example, involved in it. So I just want to say we're listening to you, but I mean, there are pros and cons of that.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, sir.
I have some strong feelings. I'm in support of my colleague in terms of concern for the presence of educators, people with professional backgrounds in education, and particularly the universities systems and the community colleges in Connecticut. So as a political scientist, I would like to ask you this question. A couple of things that seemed to me to be shockingly absent here was any mention of leadership from minority communities, from organizations like unions that might have a progressive outlook on extending educational benefits to people beyond the pale. They seem to be missing. I think the current situation, and I don't want to be critical or anything beyond what's realistic, but I think if you look at the Board of Regents and what happened in the first two and a half years of their operation, you had on that board exactly what you're talking about here, high-powered political people, people with various, you know, a lot of people from the General Assembly past backgrounds. Reading history for that period, I mean, there were chaotic changes. There was a constant turnover of people at the top. And I'm very disappointed by the fact that even now when the regents hire people to be the administrative leaders, they have to spend over $1 million to conduct studies about what they should do, which, in my conception of leadership, they should know from the start. You at least have a blueprint or an outline. I think that that particular model has not been successful here. And I just want to add two other things. The business community obviously has the majority of influence, and they spend the most money lobbying, and they're the best organized, and so they have to be present. And they do, because they can offer jobs to people, hold the future of the state in their hands in an economic sense. But they've also been very narrowly self-interested in recent times. And some of the austerity measures that were forced on in budgets in the past, I would say 10 or 12 years, bore the brunt of people who, although they were making, you know, no one would admit it, but they were making, you know, world-class profits and so forth, were very concerned about state spending and, you know, particularly aid to education. I think the one thing that's missing here, the goals were excellent and the research, the data that supports them was high quality. No one could dispute those things. The remarks about including well-rounded educations, tremendously significant. But there doesn't seem to me to be anybody here, not one person that I've heard speak since we started, that has any sense of what the Connecticut State University's four campuses are really like. I spent 35 years working at every possible level. I represented the system overseas. I was vice president and then president for 15 years, president of the union for 10 years beyond that. And I got to know all the presidents, the administrators. I got to know the 150 separate programs they had. There's no sense, even I don't feel, from the regents today of what that system could contribute to this kind of an effort if it was really mobilized in that direction. I mean, having the number of students they have, having about 88% of them be from Connecticut, being in the urban areas, there's tremendous potential there for using that system. So I think whatever this board is, of course, it's going to have influence enough with the general public and with the governor to have people embrace our goals, and I understand that. And people like myself, older emeritus people, don't have that anymore. But I think you do need people that have some understanding of what the systems are really like. I listened to some of the remarks that are, you know, casually made here. They're just not true. You can state it as a lobbying position, but they're just not true. In our system, for example, just as one example, the increases in tuition always outweighed about 3 to 1 the actual amount of financial aid that was given to students. We were pricing, and we are pricing, Connecticut people out of a college education. And you can cut it any way you want. You can say, well, we increased by 10% the amount of loans, or the amount of aid we're giving, rather, to low-income families and so forth and students in need. But it never comes close to equaling the tuition increases that have taken place here. So I would say please include somebody on this or some group on this board that would have, A, some familiarity with the real institutions that are going to have to be used here as the agencies for implementation. And secondly, somebody who's going to represent interests other than those who are entrenched and already control, you know, the administrative structures. Thank you.
No, I think that's, you point out a really interesting question, because I think we're talking about an entity that has an agenda dramatically different than something that exists here today. This is not a body that should be, just realize this body, when it meets, will have before it the goals that you just approved. Their charge is, in fact, to monitor progress towards 2025 and whether the state is achieving those goals. Now, in the deliberations of that group, people will say, well, what I'm really concerned about is those faculty members over there that really don't teach, or that this isn't happening, or they'll drag you. They'll try to drag this group back into something very different from what those goals are. And if it does, in fact, wade into that detail, the whole thing will collapse. The example that Dennis and I have used is an entity, just to give you an example, and the state I'm going to mention has all sorts of problems, but it's actually has some of the similar issues as in Connecticut. But Virginia faced a problem that with the governor changing with only one term, they have faced a major problem of, in fact, narrowing the gaps, particularly related to the minority population, of dealing with major disparities between Northern Virginia and the rest of the state. Northern Virginia is about 138% of the national per capita income. The rest of the state is about 87%. And the same urban core problem, if you look at Virginia cities, if green is very wealthy, they're all green and out in the middle, but they're desperate poverty within each of those cities. So what the governors, what they put together, and it was actually Governor Mark Warner who put together, with along with the business leadership, a thing called a Council for Virginia's Future, which is really aimed at the future set of goals that are very similar to these. They express them differently. But the agenda of that commission, that council, is on the future quality of life of people within Virginia. It's not about administering UVA. In fact, it has nothing to do with administering UVA explicitly, or mucking around on those issues. So that group happens to be chaired by the governor, the House and Senate leadership, and a set of prominent business and civic leaders who are really leading that. But they've been advocates for the goals, but they've not getting down on how the institutions are governed. But I just want to emphasize, there's always the danger, David, that in fact they will get into that. If you've ever facilitated a group, you know, they will wade into all sorts of things, and they shouldn't. There'll be areas that they get into that they should not. So I would like your point to be really taken as a good contribution to the thing rather than the fixed point of view one way or the other.
Yes, what I was just emphasizing was the fact that when this board, this entity is finally constituted, it should include people who have some real understanding of what the system's elements are like and how they can perform what they've done historically.
I totally agree with you.
And not just go with, retired state legislators and so forth. Because I don't think going down the road, I said retire. Tremendous respect for what you're doing.
Yeah, and I think...
can I just make one other point, and I won't promise not to say anything all day. We're all talking about moving toward the goals for 2025. I just got to look at the summer courses at CSU and the four campuses. It's the smallest number they've ever offered. Instead of opening campuses, which are ghost towns in the summer, to people who might want to take courses, adults, non-traditional students, possibly lowering the rates, it's more restrictive now than it was before. Yeah. If we wait until 2025 to get started, we're not going to make our
one of the things that you'll find that you really struggle with, I think that these things work better where, in fact, you develop an action plan for, in fact, over the next 2 years, we're going to actually move this thing ahead. But that actually, if you do have the synchronization between these goals and what UConn's working on, I mean, UConn has a set of steps towards your kind of plans and the university system will have. Frankly, the action plans to pull this off will really be done at that level. It won't be done here. But that's maybe the good news, the bad news, if you want to put it that way. I think increasingly the governor and the legislature will use these goals as a way of questioning the systems of whether, in fact, they're making progress. It will give the legislature an agenda to actually ask some questions about whether you're just talking about stuff in the air or whether you're making progress. I know that's not something you want, Mike. No, I just fully. So, excuse me, Kathy?
I just wanted to add to David's comments that I think that the criteria would probably not apply to most younger adults, and you need to have that presence involved as well. With this criteria, it would be mostly folks that are 50 and above.
Yeah, excuse me, I just want to make sure I understand.
That the design criteria for this leadership entity would probably not allow for younger adults to be part of this. It would be,
well,
so folks for that this is most applicable for, this setup that and goals, they wouldn't be there. They wouldn't be part of that discussion, and I think that would be very unfortunate.
Yeah, I think what you're really underscoring is diversity of the population, and that sure was intent. I just, for space, but you know, if you look at the population that's totally out of the conversation, it in fact is this, you know, and Mike referred to it, it's frankly, there's a large pool in this state, which we really underscored, which in fact is not college and career ready. They're recently out of high school, and they're largely African American, Hispanic, or Latino populations that are in fact totally unrepresented in it. So if you have all the whippy young students who are the leaders of state government, they are not representative of, in fact, the next generation of students. So I think your point is really well taken, and it has to be really serious about what we mean by representative. So I think that's really important. Yes.
I think you just said the magic word that we've all been thinking about, and that is diversity. And my other concern, and this is maybe too nitpicking, but when these commissions are appointed, what generally occurs is that it is often not the people who are the individuals or whatever constituency they represent who actually appear, and they're not the people with the clout necessarily, and this is a case in point. So I really think, much like the model of the Stanford Partnership, which has different goals and a different agenda, it really has to be the specific person or constituency by title. And I would agree that there needs to be union representation, there needs to be a thoughtful process that's not really going to happen right now about the various constituencies that it would take to really move this forward.
You know, that what we're talking about, and that relates very much to, you know, the community and economic development, if you look at who's involved in regional community development, economic development, you wouldn't necessarily always say that the leadership of that group is, in fact, by the membership of those bodies, as diverse as we're talking about. But I think that you have to have a mandate that even though the membership of a group may not have it, there have to be ways of engaging those populations. I mean, it requires a lot of sophistication for somebody to participate, as you all do. But that doesn't mean the group ought to be ignored. We just got to work on the issue of diversity and representation. Yes?
Actually, instead of diversity, I would use the word integrity and credibility in particular. Unless this entity is credible across the board, it's not going to be able to carry the day. So let's focus on something that is credible, will be credible for all of us.
Right. Definitely.
I think Jason had a point.
Yes, sir.
I not only have one, I have two. Thank you.
I tell you, I can't see out of the corner of my thing. Those of you who said Judith, you will be totally left out.
That's all right. 2 points I want to make. One is just following up on what David had said earlier. I'm covering for a colleague who teaches a summer class at Manchester Community College this summer, and we had our first class began last night, and the students were introducing themselves, and this was the first time I've seen this happen. About 85% of the students in the class are CSU students going to Manchester Community College to take it's an introductory American government, you know, gen ed class.
Right.
And almost all of them who were from CSU gave the very simple reason in terms of why they were taking the class at MCC: cost. So you're finding that students are getting more sophisticated to that as well. Whereas, I mean, when I went to UConn, God, I almost said 20 years ago, almost 20 years ago, the thought of doing that never would have crossed my mind. But you're getting students are becoming more savvy consumers. So that was one thing I wanted to say in regard to what David had said. The other thing, and I'm going to try to say this as non-flippant as possible, but I see this policy leadership entity up there, and I read that, and maybe I'm just an old, cynical, public administrator, lobbyist, politico, whatever. But I look at that with the, and my first reaction to that is, it's the old Board of Governors for higher education without teeth. And it was just 2 years ago that the governor and the legislature, did away with the Board of Governors of higher education. So I wasn't in the legislature, certainly wasn't evaluating whether that was a good decision or a bad decision. But certainly, like I said, that's my first reaction is, are we just going back to a similar system? The only difference, this being, the old Board of Governors of Higher Education had real regulatory authority over certain subject matters. I mean, this would just be an advisory council, so to speak. But you read the first two bullets, it almost reads exactly like the enabling legislation of the old Board of Governors.
But I think you could... I think that's a really good point made, because that's not what we're talking about, but if we're communicating, let me get Dennis wanted to say something here. I just, because he's working on something, let me try this. Believe it or not, trying to get states away to focus on these long-time agendas is what Dennis and I spend our lives on. And this history across the United States is the entities like the Board of Governors are really failing to be able to carry out the role we're talking about for the very reasons that I mentioned on the first, on the bullet down the bottom. They really have totally lost their ability and credibility to essentially represent the public and to set out these broad times. And frankly, states are eliminating. We had this exact conversation about a month ago with Jerry Brown's staff in California. Because there is a desperate need for essentially a leadership group to talk about the future of California and the regions of Virginia, of that state of California, and to do so in a way which complements and draws together the University of California, California State Universities, and the community colleges. He eliminated the thing that was called the Board of Governors because it was doing what was down there. So we're struggling with him and with the governors saying, how do you do this in California without creating something which is another state agency? Because California will not get anywhere by essentially the sum of institutional interest in California. It simply won't. So we're asking you to think out of the box a little bit of this, Jason. And we don't feel that, in fact, a recreating of something like that is absolutely anything that Connecticut needs to do. Okay, so how do we think of something else that will work?
I guess take away all the policy concerns from it. From a practical standpoint, I don't want us to turn a report into the legislature and have them look at it and say, well, you're recommending that we basically, do something that we just did away with a couple of years ago, even if it's not exactly the same. Yes,
you're absolutely,
I understand.
Yeah. And we would be totally...
People in government are very wary of retreading old things.
Yeah. So. I mean, one of the things that I think is particularly important to keep pointing out is that the old Board of Governors... basically had the oversight of the CSU and the community colleges. I mean, that was its real job. And the reality is that a very large part of getting to the goals that we just talked about lie in the hands of the independent sector. And in Connecticut, one has to be very cognizant of how you build policy, not just for public institutions, but for public priorities. And when you talk about the public priorities, in this state, when you take a look at the numbers, you know, they generate half or a little bit better that of the baccalaureate degrees, almost all the certificates, and et cetera. Then you have to get very serious about how you forge public policy that encompasses the whole enterprise, not just have some manner of regulatory authority over the public sector institutions. And so what we're really trying to craft is something that says, yes, we're building this for all of Connecticut and for all of Connecticut institutions, and at the same time trying to keep from trotting on the prerogatives and the responsibilities and the authorities of the systems and the boards thereof.
So, but I...
Yeah, Judy.
I just want to go back to an example that I used, I think, at our last meeting, which was the Commission for Educational Technology in this state. And so it was a legislatively created commission that includes business, it includes unions, it includes higher education, it includes K-12. It was set with very specific legislation that listed the mandate of the commission, who needed to be on it, as well as overarching state goals around educational technology. And it came about because all of the players at this table and several other tables were all working across purposes. And so it had very specific goals. You know, we shall create a high-speed network linking all schools, colleges, and libraries. We should have an online degree. We should have a digital library, whatever, et cetera, et cetera. Students should be cyber-ready by the fourth grade. And the commission was not doing those things, but the commission was charged with essentially on a quarterly basis saying to the state agencies that were charged with, or private colleges or others, what are you doing? What's the plan? Bringing that plan to the legislature, working to get it funded. And it was when the commission came into being, the state goals were articulated, that all that happened. And it included, you know, I mean, the little-known secret of the statewide Connecticut Education Network is that the only payers of the system for most of its existence have been my institutions and the state. And my institutions gladly paid it. Now they're not so much because the rates are, but my institutions gladly paid it. And they were there for sort of the both the good of the state and good of the institutions, and it provided some of the funding. So I think that, and it was because there was an articulated state goal, they received some benefit, the higher ed received some benefit, K-12 did. I see this in many ways the same way. There, we're going to have articulated state goals. We need some entity that is not the regulatory entity to be saying, what's going on? How are we meeting them? What's your piece of that pie? OPM, how are you looking at those goals? Legislature, are you getting that these are still our state goals? And so the choices you make around funding need to be around those goals. I mean, but I would say I think that the stakeholders need to be at that table, not in some advisory group, but it needs to have credibility with the stakeholders.
The other reality maybe is this is maybe not, the majority of its focus is not on higher education. It's on the people of the state. That's an awfully hard, I'm going to try an analogy, and you can, but I'm working with Ireland about the same kind of an issue. And the trick is that higher education in Ireland touches every dimension of the future of that country. Particularly the issues related to arts and culture are really critical to the future of that country. And so part of his employment, and if you look at the structure of the government, there's an agency responsible for economic development, enterprise development. But there are many bodies interested in the arts and culture. And then there also is the education department. But if the leadership of higher education is appended to the education department and is seen as a subdivision of just education, its link with the other dimensions of government and policy in that country are totally wiped out. So in some ways, this needs to be the entity where people in the community, in Lindy's area, in labor, and the other departments see as coming together about the future. And it's bridging all the silos in Connecticut government. But the issue is then the means to that end happen to be the universities. And I agree with you and it goes back to David's point, if they are the means to the end, they ought to have some sensitivity to the institutions and understand how they're being used. But see what I mean? This is not a commission to coordinate higher education in the state. That's partly.
And I mean, I don't think that's what we need.
I think that.
So, and that wasn't what I was suggesting.
I was blaming you. No, I.
Oh, okay. No, thank you. That's having people.
Let's have a vote. How many people want a new coordinating body for higher education in Connecticut? I don't think there's a unanimous vote for that. And if we can get that message clear, but I think that an entity that can, in fact, provide strategic recommendations of where the state ought to invest, feeding it into OPM and the legislature, might be a helpful entity.
I just wanted to build on something that Judy said. I mean, one of the challenges we have in this state is all of our regional, city, agenda-driven organizations. I actually was starting to make a list of 5 or 6 different organizations without thinking about it who try to embody some portion of what we're trying to do in this state. And what we have here in these goals, which are so well articulated, is a platform for unifying our state in a way that we may not have in other places. But to do it with only education as a focus won't advance that unification. So whether it should be some inventorying of other entities that feed into this in terms of building consensus and advancement before we think about what this commission looks like, I think actually that's the way I feel, but I don't know how practical that is. I mean, there are things like the Connecticut Institute for the 21st Century, which is a very big, broad idea. And then there are smaller commissions. But I think we've got to get everybody rowing together in one way.
See, part of it, I don't know how many those of you have been involved in issues. If I mention anchor institutions, does that connect with the reality is that there may be multiple groups, but the public and independent institutions in this state are the largest, most significant entities within most of these regions. And they are, in fact, the major platform that a lot of this work can be done. You know, if you go to Western Connecticut State University, that's the major area, you know, institution within that area. You know, and Yale is playing that role. And UConn is playing the role in certain areas, and the community colleges are. To put it in a negative way, if those institutions are inwardly directed, focused on their own self-interest, basically you will find none of the capacity of those organizations you're talking about to be sustained. If those institutions are engaged together, it supports a whole network of other arts and culture and other supporting activities. So the reality is higher ed is a major platform in the state for getting greater synergy. If it's fighting with itself, all these other splinter groups have nothing to anchor to. So, I mean, that's why we've emphasized that role. I mean, these places are the institutions, the higher ed institutions, are incredibly powerful forces for transforming the regions in which they're located, everything from sustainable environment and everything like that. If they're doing their self-interest and fighting with each other, the state loses. So that's the basic idea.
And the difficult part is that most of this at some point becomes driven by relationships, not structure. And so, you know, in some way, what what the best you can hope for out of structure is that you build the capacity, you know, that you jumpstart the network, that you pull together the folks that need to be talking to each other and start building some habits of working and playing together in ways that haven't been the case. And, you know, and it's about higher ed, but it's equally true of the pieces of state government. It's higher ed versus K-12. It's all of education and employers. I mean, it's all of those pieces that eventually get networked if this is going to work. And, you know, we're you know, Ames and I are both been around. This isn't our first rodeo, as you can tell by looking at us. And the point is that we're not so dumb as to think that structure answers it. At the same time, structure can certainly get in the way of it if it's the wrong structure. And so what we're trying to do is think of ways that one can keep the agenda going, keep the right people at the table until the, you know, keep the blessed sound going, as one of my colleagues once said.
Mike, this leadership team, in many ways, can, whatever that may be, leadership something, in many ways can help all of us in higher education. Having only been here for, well, maybe now 3 months, there are various bureaucratic policies that hinder us in many ways in doing our business. And this leadership team might help us to navigate that from a much different lens than what we've been successful in being able to do. All right? So there's great value to giving strong consideration of how this gets erected and how it actually would support our particular work. The second is that it also presents opportunities that it will create collaborations. And one that I would share with you is up in Massachusetts that's actually a heck of a model. And it's the Five College Consortium in Amherst that enables students at the University of Massachusetts, Amherst, and Amherst College and Smith College and some of the finest private liberal arts institutions in the country for the students to easily move back and forth and take courses and credits. And it never hinders the student in that exchange of degree completion. And is also ease of movement of faculty that instruct on multiple different campuses at multiple different times during the week. And the same thing with student services that it provides. And as I look at the map of post-secondary education in Connecticut, we have enormous opportunities to create similar types of collaborations, right? Which I think is imperative and incumbent upon all of us. Because it is very clear to me there's not enough money to go around, right? And if we ourselves cannot come together and figure out how we are going to deliver education and create a more an advanced education citizenry for the state of Connecticut, somebody's going to do it for us. And we all know in education we don't like when anybody does it for us. So there's an enormous opportunity that has been presented to us that if we're willing to look at it with a much different lens, and I'm willing to look at it in a much different lens than my blinders would be to say to look at it strictly from the Connecticut State College and University system, but how we deliver something that is maybe of higher quality and more advanced for this state, and focus on not our the education, but creating the education citizenry, this sort of leadership team might help us to advance all of what the state's needs are, and in many ways our own personal agendas as we go through this as well. So I think there's a great opportunity here to look at it.
Does that work? One of the real honest policy review observations about this state is it's extremely skilled in building silos and groups competing with each other. And one of the criteria would be, for heaven's sakes, let's not reinforce those. But one of the things that needs to happen is, in the periodic assessment of progress, is to really be very honest about the barriers to the kind of collaboration you're talking about, Mike. And they're inevitably, as Dennis will point out, relate to the funding incentives. I mean, all the incentives are to eat each other's children in competition for enrollment and sustainability, rather than to share responsibility for getting a student to a, you know, education goal through collaboration. So that's the identification of those kinds of changes that need to be made may be one of the important.
The other thing that this state is really good at is building one-off solutions and demonstration programs and saying, you know, we got this really big problem. Let me give you this really little solution to it. And we'll put a little bit of money behind it, and they keep accumulating. And, you know, my analogy is it's like putting one more barnacle on a boat. And Connecticut has gotten to the point where it's got enough barnacles on it that the boat doesn't move. And, you know, there just needs to be some, first of all, keel scraping, and second of all, there needs to be something that says, let's back up and say, there are four or five or six really big things, like funding strategies, like how do you really do student financial aid, and, you know, and let's reconceptualize on a much larger scale some of these things, that you know, these small solutions that are somebody's favorite idea to get funded or whatever isn't getting you there, and doing more of it won't get you there any faster or at all. So part of it is what Mike said. Is partly, how do you think about getting rid of barriers? But it's also saying, how do you restructure some of the basic ground rules under which institutions operate in such a way that, one, there have incentives for certain kinds of behaviors, and two, that there are, you know, devices. At the end of the day, it's about good presidents leading good institutions. And so how do you, at the state level, at the policy level, create an environment in which that can happen. And that can happen in a way that gets you to state goals, not just to institutional rankings in U.S. News. So, you know, nothing simple about this. But I think that, you know, when we talk about this entity, whatever it is, this leadership team, that what we're talking about is the venue in which those conversations happen, and which the issues get identified, and which some recommendations for policy change go forward to the folks who can make policy changes.
All right, so we've gotten, are there any other comments, sir? I think I can't summarize them all, but I think representation of educators.
You have one last quick question. Jason has a quick question. Jason.
Okay. He's missing me over here. It's all right. It sounds to me as though there's no disagreement on the underlying policy, and I think that's a very good thing. Your informal poll of, you know, who wants to see the, you know, a governing structure come back. I think that's very telling in terms of what we're doing here. I think Judy made a great point by comparing it to the Commission for Educational Technology and what that group has done, or making a comparison there. And again, maybe I'm cynical because I'm old, you know, New Englander, has been around Connecticut for a long time. We get maybe. We get, I lived 100% of my life in New England, though, so that's got to count for something. So I'm just as stubborn as everybody else. I have seen, and I know that you know, those of you in state government, I don't need to tell, seen plenty of good ideas get tanked because they're not presented in the right way. So I guess what I would say is, as we're developing this, Connecticut is a state in which we're very into semantics. We're very into what we call things. We're very into how we do that. So I think we, as we're developing this idea of a policy leadership entity, we've got to keep that in mind. And I would err more on the side of the type of language that Judy used to describe Commission on Educational Technology, because that seems to be what we're looking for.
Caution well taken.
Thank you.
If you take the other thing that worries me in some respects is keeping thinking of just an entity. Actually, starting tomorrow, you can start having an impact with those goals by having discussion among the existing multiple networks in this state, including the institutions, about how the goals, how your work is in fact connecting with these. You know, it's a very different sort of idea of leadership where you don't necessarily create a group which then agrees to the goals and tells people it. You begin to, the test of these are whether they will in fact, as Dennis asked, you know, whether they in fact have any resonance with the discussion of the future of UConn. If they don't, we got the wrong ones. You know, as you have Judy's group gets together of where the independent sector fits in Connecticut, these ought to be kind of the framework for things. So what I would encourage you to do is test them in the groups that you're involved in and say, you know, this is, we want to have a framework that gives meaning about this. So the only other point I want to make, I go back to the Ireland thing. I remember we came up with a structure with OECD for Ireland, and somebody said, you know, Ames, clearly you're demonstrating you don't have a clue about this country, because this is a country that doesn't operate by structures, it operates by informal networks and relationships. And what you're talking about is the need for building relationships and networks among these groups that are, that need to work together. And the last thing they're likely to do that is use that, a governmental structure as a means to do that. So, I mean, there's an element of that that...
Mindful of the chairman's five more minutes.
You're adjourning at 5:30. No, excuse me. Okay. So I think any other comments on this item?
No.
I just have one as a closing. Quickly, I think it's really important that we've thrown this out there. And I think for me, it's going back home and massaging this. And so when we come back, we've had time to think about what the entity might be. And this is the beginning of the conversation. It's not, this is, so I just think that from the
but
start,
it's
just but to it's, say that.
Isn't it also true that it's really important that in September you come to closure on a set of options that are realistic or will be gone nowhere? So, okay.
I mean, I'm wondering if perhaps there might be some material we can distribute about some of the models that are out there. I think there are two particular models that we are interested in. That we think may fit the task in front of us. And so what we'll try to do is to get that material to you, and I would second Roberta's comment, which is it really does call for each and every one of us to take a good look at it, remembering that this is not an organization that is going to control it. This is an organization whose job it is to watch out for these three goals that we all agree about, and to figure out how to advise the policymakers, the legislators, the government, and, you know, as to the progress in those goals. So, again, if you can, I would ask that you take a look at some of the materials that will come to you before September, so that we can really use that time well in the September meeting. As you notice on your agenda, September 9th is our next meeting. In the meantime, Dennis and Ames will actually be putting the flesh that we keep referring to on the plan, and we should be able to work on that with you as well. So with that, the gift that we are giving to you is we're going to take the summer off. given everybody's vacation schedules and everything else, and given that the real work now to put this plan together is in front of our consultants, I think they deserve some time without having to come out and be with us all the time. And that will make September's meeting a good one. So I thank you for a very frank conversation. I think I was struck by the level of candor at the table today, and I think that's exactly what we need. And this group has actually, those relationships that you talked about as opposed to structures, I'm feeling them now, which is actually makes me very happy that the commission is really gelling around that. So I thank you and wish you all a good summer. And we made it to 429. Thank you.